Sports and Recreation reporting on SDPB is supported by Regional Health, helping patients and communities live well.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live this week from the Black Hills Bureau in Rapid City downtown. We're inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio, and we're closing out the week with members of the Black Hills Climbers Coalition. First, we have climber Chris Pelsarski. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Mark Rafferty, hey, and president of the Climbing Coalition. Mark, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right. So what I was telling you during the break, the only thing I've ever climbed is a tree. I hiked Little Devil's Tower, and I'm working on this. This is something I'm going to keep getting outside in the Black Hills. But you guys have been doing this for how long? Taking you back to the first, Mark, let's start with you because...
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Man. Well, I mean, just like... How you've been climbing around on trees and stuff, it all starts there. But I got my start with my older brother, and I hated it at first. He, like a typical older brother, he was pushing and right. made me cry a lot. So I didn't like it at first. And actually, it's funny because Chris actually taught my older brother how to climb. He found my brother in the parking lot, and he's like, hey, you're doing it wrong. And so it's kind of funny because Chris was a mentor for my brother, and then my brother was a mentor to me. It's just like
Chris, he was
cycle.
Teaching it wrong too, right? If he just made him cry at first, right?
Yeah.
I have never made anybody cry, ever.
How'd you get your start, Chris?
I got started out in the mountains in Montana. I worked at this summer camp, and the first experience I have that I remember really clearly, like wanting to climb something, was not really a technical peak, but just being out in the mountains in June. And I looking up at this peak, and it was my first time being in the mountains, and I just started running towards the summit. And it wasn't a big mountain; it was like 11,000 feet or something. But that sparked my interest in technical climbing.
And how old are you then at that time?
That was 2001 or something like that.
Okay, yeah, and it really never looked back at that point.
Yeah, never looked back.
What's the best way to get started for people who are just like, yeah, I want to do this? You got to find somebody.
Yeah, a lot of times, especially in our area, we don't really have an access to a big climbing gym. So a lot of times it's just finding somebody that does it. And a lot of times I know people that get their start just by going up on M Hill here in town. Uh-huh. And if you walk right at the base of M Hill, right where the trail starts, there's a big bowl and you can see a bunch of chalk on it. And just getting your start there and to kind of get a taste of what it's like. And then there you'll probably meet somebody and ask to get out. And it's basically just, putting yourself out there, asking people to.
All right. So it's winter. We're looking outside the window here, and there's a whole lot of snow. And let's talk a little bit about ice climbing, because a lot of people don't know. And Chris, I was on your Facebook page this morning, and there was some video that people had posted, and it's basically climbing a waterfall, right?
It is climbing a frozen waterfall.
Wow.
yeah, I had the same idea.
Who had that idea? And talk about some of the technical challenges.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, first of all, when I first started ice climbing, I had never even considered it. I had been rock climbing a while, and one of my climbing mentors, a guy named Mike Nona in Spearfish, he said, hey, you want to go ice climbing? And I'm like, I could do that.
Yeah,
and he's like, well, yeah, why wouldn't you want to do that? And I started thinking, yeah, why wouldn't I want to do that? climb a frozen waterfall? That sounds so freaking cool.
Yeah.
And so we went out ice climbing, and I was hooked from that point on.
Different gear? Same
it's
gear?
It's totally, different, totally gear. Different gear. What's interesting about it, you've got your tools, your ice tools, which like ice axes, ice picks. And then you got crampons, which you wear on your boots. They're like the spikes that you kick into the ice. And I think one of the most amazing things about ice climbing is it's always different.
Okay.
And there are ice climbs that form up only certain times of year, or they're very rare. You can have rare climbs that may only form once every 10 years or 20 years, or in some cases even once in a lifetime.
So you have to be out there. You have to find the locations, mm-hmm. and then decide whether it's something that can be done, something that you can do, and then figure out how to do it.
Exactly.
And then you
yeah.
have to do it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing waiting for you. There's no, you know, every ice climb has to be like, there's nothing in the in that rock already that you can use to assist you. It is all going to be a brand new climb, right? Do I understand this?
Yeah.
Am I thinking about it right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, what you do is, it's called lead climbing. And in lead climbing, you start with the rope on the ground. And you tie into the rope. And so, you don't have a rope hanging above you. And as you climb, you're kicking your feet in, you're swinging your ice tools into the ice. And, you're hanging all your weight on that. And you use ice screws for protection if you fall. And so those are like hollowed aluminum tubes. And you just spiral those into the ice. And then you clip your rope into that, and then you climb above it. So if you were to fall above an ice screw, then you'll fall however far above it, you'll fall down to it, and that far below it as well.
Okay.
And that's called lead climbing. And so somebody does have to lead the ice climb, unless there's an easy way to hike around the top, but normally there isn't.
So somebody has to go up first, and that's mm-hmm. the highest risk.
Yeah.
Sort mm-hmm. of. All right, so ice breaks, right?
It does.
It collapses mm-hmm. more easily than, you know, yeah. a rock would. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that risk, Mark?
When I went climbing with Chris here earlier this season in Custer State Park, one of the biggest things is we went on Honey Bear Falls, which is, it's a waterfall that in the summer is just barely trickling, but in the winter it forms this beautiful, thick ice waterfall.
Yeah.
And in order to preserve that, you can't be smacking at it all the time in different spots. Otherwise, you're just tearing away from the ice. So a lot of times when the first person goes up, like the lead climber who would go up, he'd go in and he'd make his, you know, slams in the ice and his ice picks. So then the second person tries to mimic exactly where he went.
Okay.
Tries to almost put his ice picks exactly where his were, just so it minimizes the damage to the ice and so other people can use it and so it's not really okay. ruining the formation.
So there's an ethic to it as well as
exactly.
as safety and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit. Just the sense of being in the hills and paying attention to something like the next climber, the next person, the next generation of climbers.
Well, I think that's like one of the main reasons the Black Hills Climbing Coalition is even a coalition is because they want to minimize the impact climbers have on our environment and on the rock that. So, I mean, even tourists and our biggest like goal here is to make it so tourists, when they walk by, aren't going to see marks of climbers. You're just going to see the beautiful landscaping that is there. And that kind of correlates with both rock and ice. And it's kind of the same motto with backpacking. You know, pack out what you pack in. You know, leave the landscape as natural as possible. Right. And we try to emulate that as much as we can.
Where are you from originally, Mark?
I'm from Rapid City.
You are from mm-hmm. Rapid City.
Yeah, moved okay. around a little bit, but
yeah.
Mainly from here.
All right, so Chris, you're the naked climber.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that because you've gone ice climbing in the nude.
Yeah. I want to hear about this.
I never thought I'd be talking about this again in a public setting. Back in when was that? It was February 2012, I think. My friend and I were climbing at Bridal Veil Falls in Spearfish Canyon. And, you know, it's an easier ice climb. So if you're an ice climber, it's not a huge challenge. And you know, the idea just popped in my head, you know, hey, it'd be kind of funny, add a challenge, try climbing this naked.
Hey.
And my friend's like, you know, hey, I'll stand on the road and take pictures of you. Like, all right, cool. So we did a pretty elaborate setup. You know, I climbed it once first and stashed a rope at the top. And then, I actually soloed the climb, so I didn't wear a harness or anything like that. All I had on was my socks, boots, and crampons. And, you know, people are always like, why did you do that? And I'll tell you why I did it, because it makes people ask why someone would do that. So I did it to get people thinking.
Yeah.
It was kind of a statement of like, sometimes you want to do, you got to do crazy things. You know, sometimes you got to take a big risk. And when you see somebody doing something like totally out of the ordinary, that just makes you say, why would somebody ever do that? I thought, you know, that might get people thinking, hey, maybe I should do whatever I'm wanting to do that I'm too afraid to do.
Right. At that moment when the thought popped into your head, it was like, you know what, I could do this naked. This would be just a different thing to do,
yeah.
Challenge myself. How short is the distance between deciding to actually do it and thinking about it? For you, it was a short trip to just say, yes, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it was a very short trip. And you know, that's, I guess it was kind of an exercise in living that kind of life. Because as a climber, you do have to make decisions in the moment. Name of the show. Yeah. I love that name.
Thank you.
You do. You have to make decisions in the moment. And that's actually like real life, isn't it? You know? And when you stall out, that's when things don't happen. When you make a decision to do something in the moment, that's when the magic starts happening and things start happening in your life. That's when you go for it is when you get what you want.
Right. Okay, but if you fall that day and you get hurt that day, that's how you're going to the hospital, and then you're the guy who tried to, you know, climb naked and fell and broke something. So you have to have a willingness to fail, or you're not going to
fail.
Yeah,
I mean,
you weren't going to fall because you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the chance that I could, but I didn't think I would,
right?
And that's why I did it. Now, if I was like, you know, yeah, I think I'm going to fall doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway, that would just be stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
it's
climbing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole sort of conversation that you're having as a climber. Is you're not out trying to do the stupid thing. You're going out trying to be successful at the next thing.
Try to be a master at your craft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in the context of understanding that failing is okay. Sometimes, I mean, you have to know when it's okay to fail. Yeah. And when it's not. Soloing a ice climb naked, that would not be a great time to fall.
Yeah.
But really, in that case, the bigger risk was really the social risk and how it was perceived in the community. That was the big risk for me.
How was it perceived in the community?
You know, I remember getting a lot of free beers at the bars in Rapid after that. I remember people taking pictures with me saying, overhearing me talking about it, saying, you're the naked ice climber. I heard about that. We got to get a picture together. And, you know, I saw my act inspiring others.
Yeah.
I really did see that.
Yeah.
I really saw that people got a lot of joy out of it. Of course, then there were people that are like, you know, you really shouldn't have done that. So there's always two sides to everything. But I believe it was an inspirational act.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think? Inspirational act?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Makes me want to go do it, but I'm not that confident yet, so I'll wait a little bit.
Tell me about some of your favorite climbs, some of the things that you really, you know, look back on, you're like, I'm glad I did that, whether it's ice climbing or some other, you know, summertime event.
Oh, man. Well, in one moment in particular was this past summer in August, my buddies and I went to the Wind River Range in Wyoming, and this was just outside of Lander. I think Lander is probably one of the closest towns there. And back in the wilderness area, there's a big cirque or an area of peaks called the Cirque of the Towers. And there, and I think it's like 14 or 16 peaks that sit around 11 or 12,000 feet. And I went in there with a friend of mine, Alex Buffingston, and we had the mentality to climb every single one of those in the 3 days we were there.
Wow.
And so the first day, of course, we climbed two routes on the hike in, which was like 11 miles in. And then the next day we met up with our other party that met us there at our campsite, climbed something that next day. And then that following day, our last day, we climbed starting from one end of the cirque, which basically just forms like a big circle.
Right.
One end, I started at like 3 a.m. and went up and down all the peaks until we made it all the way back around into camp in like 14 hours and climbed over like 13 peaks that day. And that was
other people were binge watching Netflix that day.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you know that while you're doing it, right? Like, you know that there's another choice you could be making, but you're doing this.
Yeah. Part of me is
it's got to be a good feeling.
Yeah. And that's one thing too, is like nowadays we have cameras on everything.
Right.
And that's one reason why I think I take photos and Chris take photos. We're both photographers here. And yeah. One of the things is we take photos on top of these peaks or in the middle of these peaks, showing the challenges that we're facing on that day or that climb. And we kind of want to influence others to get out and do the same thing because yeah. there is more than just the screen that you're sitting right. in front of at home, you know?
How much of this is intellectual, Chris, and how much of it is physical?
Ooh, good question.
I'd say, yeah, that's a great question. I think it's all intellectual because it doesn't really matter how hard of a climb you're doing. Making the decision to get out there is what's important. Making the decision to take a risk in your life and do something, it doesn't have to be climbing, but, you know, not sitting at home and binge watching Netflix. I mean, that's, you're not taking any risk sitting at home.
Right.
So taking a risk in your life is what it's all about. And it doesn't matter if you're climbing the easiest climb there is out there, or if you're pushing the limits of what's humanly possible. Either way, you're pushing yourself.
Yeah. And you're making those decisions the whole process. I mean, you don't get to daydream really while you're making a climb, do you? I mean, you got to be pretty focused on exactly what's in front of you and exactly what you're doing.
Well, that's like the one thing I love about it so much is how much focus it demands. Mm-hmm. At the end of a climb, if you just sit there and realize, okay, what was I thinking during that time? And you're not thinking about anything else. You're just completely in the moment because you have to be. Because if you're distracted, then you're going to make mistakes.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I love about it so much is that it demands so much focus. And when you're in the moment and climbing something easy or even really technically demanding, everything else just disappears. And it's just you, your partner, and what you're doing right then and there. And it's a pretty good feeling.
Chris, when you were doing the naked ice climb, is there a moment when you're up there and climbing the next, you know, 5 minutes, and you're thinking, this is colder than I thought it was going to be, or uh-oh, or is the whole time you're just thinking, this is the best thing I've done in a long time?
Most of the time I was climbing, it was a sense of, this is pretty cool. I can't believe I'm doing this. And as I was climbing, there were cars driving by honking the horn and people getting out going, hey, that's awesome. That's hilarious. Taking pictures, you know. And then I will say about 3/4 of the way up the climb, that's when a Forest Service vehicle drove by and they honked the horn a bunch of times, but they kept driving by. And I do actually kind of remember, I remember specifically, this is one of the only specific thoughts I remember having. I remember just stopping moving when I saw the Forest Service vehicle going by, thinking like Jurassic Park. Like, if I don't move, maybe they won't see me. And so I just stopped. That's exactly what I remember thinking at that moment. Of course, they did see me.
They did see you. They weren't going to miss that one.
Yeah.
Black Hills Climbers Coalition, you can find them on Facebook. Gentlemen, we are out of time. This is just the best way to end our week in the Black Hills. So thank you so much, Chris and Mark, for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Lori.
And we'll be watching the next adventure to get the inspiration we can get from it.
All right.
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks for having us.